This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Besser gets it back, passes across to Pettersson to the back door for Chase, and up for Pearson. He scores! Tanner Pearson has his seventh of the year, and the Canucks lead 1-0. That ball goes left wing for Sundqvist. Low shot tip, they score! An awkward bounce in the slot off Justin Falk.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Krug of the line, now to the right wing for Tarasenko. Pass in front, they score! Braden Shen at the back door. Taps it past Mikey DiPietro, and the Blues strike on the power play to take a 2-1 lead. Tarasenko, who gets it, goes back to Kyrou with a long shot, he scores! Jordan Kyrou with a long-range wrister. There was traffic in front. DiPietro couldn't track it.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 3-1 against the Blues at Rogers Arena, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar are going to be joined by Corey Hirsch coming up in a few moments. Our feedback channels are open, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650, and also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, Bick, you know, the Canucks played a hard game again tonight. It was Bruce Boudreau's 1,000th game as NHL head coach, and the players left it all out there for him. Now, the reality is the Canucks are seriously lacking in some firepower. No Connor Garland, no JT Miller, and no Bo Horvat. And the Canucks, well, despite getting close to 40 shots on goal tonight, could not beat Willie Husso more than once. And that happened right after a 5-on-3 expired in the first period. And honestly, Willie Husso was great for the St. Louis Blues. And not that Mikey DiPietro was bad for the Canucks. He just couldn't make enough saves to keep this team in it, considering how little they were able to score in this game.
Yeah, I thought that the three goals were, I mean, one was a tip, one was a backdoor tap-in.
Yeah.
You know, and he really didn't have much of a chance on all three goals. So, you know, it's just the way it goes. But I'll talk it right now. Sad I am not talking to Bick because he ripped me in the pregame show.
Yeah.
So
you're never going to look at him.
He's dead to me.
DTM.
Good thing we have this fiberglass between us.
Yeah, you know, it was a good one.
You know, the good ones, those are ones that sting, too. The good ones sting.
It did. Yeah. Man. I got just high five.
It sat there, and I was like, is anyone going to take this one? Anyone?
It's like
I
it was on
I'll
a
tee.
Yeah.
I was surprised people, you know, Batch and Sat just let that one sit there.
Yeah.
I've been away for, I haven't seen you in a month here, right?
Yeah. No,
some
I
of
like
us are better teammates than others. But
it's all good.
Yeah.
It's
oh, that's great stuff. Great stuff. No, you know what? Tonight, the effort, A+, man. It really was there. And especially when you look at the shot total, the chances, it was there situationally. It just like the cutting edge. And when you have 35 goals out of your lineup with Horvat, Garland, and Miller, it's you need that last little bit. And they were missing it.
Yeah. Man, that's especially like the breakaways Dickinson got.
Oh,
and man,
the amount of chances he's had.
I feel bad for him. But no, he's not a natural goal scorer. He's a guy that checks and but you know what? Give Husso credit. Like, good Lord, he played extremely well. You know, with goaltending like that, I was saying, man, that's a dangerous Blues team. If they can get it together, they've got all the pieces. They've got good forwards. They've got solid defense. They're built through and through.
They'll be busy at the deadline. Get maybe one more D-man, maybe one more rugged style D-man, and that could be a very, very dangerous team.
You know, is a penalty killer like Tyler Mott? Is that guy for your fourth line? Is that? You know, it's something I look at, but it's tough to trade in your own conference.
Well, it is, but it comes down to where this team's going to be at by the deadline, right, and how they view this team. And as far as just how they played in the effort, you know, the last two games, I mean, all considered with how undermanned they've been, they've outchanced the opposition at even strength. They've outshot the opposition at even strength. Mm-hmm. They have carried play at evens against the opposition, two strong teams that have done a really good job 5-on-5 all season long, especially the Florida Panthers and the St. Louis Blues. I think that says a lot about the character of the group and the way Boudreau's been able to push certain buttons for this team. You do kind of wonder, what do we see from this team once they get healthy, and do they have enough runway here, despite being slightly below 500, 40 points in 41 games, to really make the organization think twice about moving guys out at the deadline, which is coming up on March 21st?
You have to. You do. You have to. You got to move guys out. You know, you look at Tanev, nothing. Markstrom, nothing. Toffoli, nothing. Edler, nothing. Levo, nothing, right? Mm-hmm. You can't do that. And they did it for one little playoff run. And now look at where they're at. And that's, you know, that's the last regime's fault. It's not anybody else's fault. You got to do what you got to do. You got to make tough decisions. And it, was it worth making it two rounds? No, it really wasn't. So this year, if you can't get that guy signed, if you, in UFAs and good guys, it's, they're great. You'd love to keep them, but you have to get something for your asset. You know, you really do. And some of those guys had no trades. But you know what? There's a way to do it. There's a way to talk to guys.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, you know. You got to get something for guys, though. Like, you know, Bick's a free agent at the end of the year. I would love to see him out of here.
Would you trade him or just let him walk?
I just, you know what? I'd trade him for a bag of peanuts if I could.
Oh, all right.
My value might be too high across the league. I don't know if people want to pay for that
I'm getting mean now, right? Because it hit me so hard.
It's hilarious. I love it. I love it.
No, I think it's great.
Patterson tonight. Gets a point.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some shifts out there when you see him. He's, you know, late in the game. He's out there with Shen and Poolman and Mott and Bailey. It's like, how are you supposed to get a goal here? There's going to be a lot of demand for him to produce. Now, he gets the assist, but you look at the overall stat sheet, no shots on goal.
Yeah. Sometimes guys have to be the guy.
Yeah.
And he's the guy right now. So, you know what? You know, it might be time to give him the reins. You give him that and say, hey, you're our guy. You're going to play a ton. You're going to play everything. You know, Pavel was that guy. Like, there's some guys that just need to be, you know, that. And if they don't feel like they're that, then they have difficulty. You know, it wears on them mentally. So he might be one of those guys because he's done it the last couple of games.
Yeah. Just really quickly, him in the faceoff circle.
Yeah.
Improving to you tonight, above 50% again. We've seen minimal improvements in that regard for him.
Well, how old is Petey now?
23.
Mm-hmm. He's still young.
Yeah.
He's still a kid, right, in the NHL. Like, he's still going
up. He just looked more confident tonight with his 11 wins tonight.
Tarasenko, O'Reilly, Shen, like, these guys are 29, 30 years old, been in the league 10 years. We forget that Pettersson is still a kid in the NHL, and we beat up guys for the money they make and how they should produce. It's not his fault he makes that kind of money. Damn straight. Where do I sign?
Yeah.
Right? You're not going to say, no, I'm not worth that. I'm too young. Or I'm just, you know, give me $4 million less, right? Because that's, yeah, no. And we need to stop beating guys up. You know, as media, as fans that are still 22, 23, 24 years old.
Well, there's a level of patience that needs to be had with players like that. The question, however, becomes, what does Jim Rutherford do with this core? Which players of the young ones does he like? And the thing is, when you come in with a brand new regime, Hershey, right? Mm-hmm. None of these guys were responsible for drafting or acquiring any of the players or signing any of these guys currently on this Canucks roster. So it's difficult to gauge where anybody stands who's not named Quinn Hughes, who's not named Thatcher Demko. We'd assume Pettersson, too, because of what he's meant to the team. But at the same time, we don't know how Jim Rutherford views all this stuff. So I think the question really becomes, what does the front office think of this team, and how do they think the best way to shape it moving forward is?
Yeah, well, you know what? You can put guys out there on the waiver, on the wire, not the waiver wire, but the trade wire, and it depends on what you get back. Like, you never know what you can get back. You know, like, if you're Edmonton right now and you're looking for a goalie, guess what? No one's going to give you a goalie. You're going to have to give up a pretty good player because everybody knows you're desperate for that player. So sometimes it's, okay, deals come into your lap that you're like, huh, we got to think about this, and we got to think long and hard about this. And the money's got to make sense. It's a different time right now because of the money, too, and the salary cap. But sometimes, you know, it lays in your lap, and you got to do it, and it might be a high-end player that you got to give up in your own line. Like, JT Miller might be a guy that you got to move at the deadline because teams want him, and they'll give you, you know, a first-rounder and a third-rounder and a player. Well, you got to look at that as a team, you know, developing. So there might be some decent players moved out of this lineup.
It could happen. Now, the question also becomes, who's going to be the next general manager of this hockey team? And Hershey, what do you kind of believe here? There's a lot of guys that have been interviewed, you know, guys like Scott Mellenby, Sean Burke, Patrick Alvin. I could see a situation where one gets named GM and maybe one gets named assistant GM as well. Like, what do you think kind of happens here in the next few days?
I put my resume in, but no one called me back.
You know, didn't quite happen.
I put my resume in for GM of Sportsnet Radio 650, and no one called me back. No, you know what? I know a few of the guys that interviewed. I kind of know who's down to the wire. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. But I like all the candidates. I think they're all good people. I think they'll all do a good job. So we'll just wait and see. I think they're close to hiring one and naming one. But, you know, maybe they want to interview someone else that they got to wait for. So I don't know when they're going to make that decision. But I do know this, that the candidates that I know that were left, very good people. Very, they will do an exceptional job. So I'm excited for this group.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hershey, well, always a pleasure having you on the post-game show. We look forward to chatting with you on Tuesday when the Canucks host the Edmonton Oilers.
You guys don't mind if I do some sit-ups and push-ups right
here?
You want
to be ready for Tuesday?
No, I want to be ready for Bick.
Oh, okay. All right, so when Boudreaux comes to the podium, you might, you know, throw a punch over at Bick Nizar.
Get set, man. Get set.
I fight dirty, Bick. That's
fish
all I know.
Hooking, yeah, and everything.
Hey, actually, really quickly, sorry, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Before we let you go, tomorrow, Doug Jarvis is going to talk. 964 games.
Yeah.
Keith Yandel's going to match that record on Tuesday night. Just how remarkable is that record, you know, from a player's perspective?
It really is. You know, and I know a lot of guys that know Keith Yandel that really like him. You know, it'd be nice to see him get to 1,000. You know, and,
not that
and,
far.
Yeah, and Doug Jarvis held that record for a long time. Records are made to be broken, and when people do, you shake their hands. But, you know, I still have the shutout record for the Western Hockey League.
Well, there you go.
I don't know. I don't even know.
Let's just go with it.
Yeah, let's just
go with it. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
I think one of the shutouts, too, I got hurt in, and the other goalie went in, but they still gave me credit for it.
Back in the day, there was no double-checking.
Yeah. Like, keep that quiet, though. Keep that under wraps.
It's just between us here.
Yeah.
Nobody else heard it.
Yeah, no one else.
We got
just
you.
Between us. Hershey, always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah.
Get home safe. That is Corey Hirsch, color analyst here on Sportsnet 650 after the Canucks lose 3-1 at home against the St. Louis Blues. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free. 1-888-275-0650. You know, before we get to some reaction, I did want to bring up Quinn Hughes, who played almost 29 minutes tonight, guys. And, you know, the big thing with Quinn was, we talked about this, that I set the over-under at 27.5 minutes because he played 10 minutes and 11 seconds in the first period. Almost got to 30. Not quite, 28 minutes.
28.55.
Yes.
That's a lot of minutes.
That's a lot of minutes.
That's a lot of minutes. And... look, they got 3-plus minutes of power play time in the first period. He had 3-plus minutes of power play time in the first period. Winds up at 4:43 on the extra man. So those minutes kind of got shrunk, so maybe he would have got to 30 because of that with the extra time there. But logged a lot of minutes and directed the puck at the net a lot. 5 on goal with 4 extra attempts, so 9 attempts in total. Oh, very direct. From Quinn Hughes. He's trying to create offense on a team, as we mentioned, that's looking for goal scorers, looking for people to put the puck in the net. And you can tweet us as well, at Bick650, at Satyrshaw. Knuckler22 says, a game like this exposes the issues with the roster. Bruce was right when he said, we don't have a lot of natural scorers on this team. They skate well, generate a lot of chances, but have trouble scoring without the top few guys. Some better forwards are needed, in my opinion. And I'm sure that's the reason why you saw Quinn Hughes try to take more of an offensive ownership today with 9 shot attempts.
Well, and he did, right? And, you know, one of the issues for this Canucks team this year has been scoring in general, and it's tough to be critical of this performance tonight with the effort they put in and the amount of chances and shots they generated, despite the fact not having 3 of their top scorers in the lineup tonight. But it has been a consistent theme all season, right? And a lot of their guys have been underachieving. Jeffro texts in and says, the team played well tonight, but I discovered a new Canucks drinking game. You take a shot every time Besser fans on an attempt. And, you know, Besser had a lot of attempts, but it was hard for him tonight, right? And we talk about Pettersson struggling a little bit here, too. And, you know, the last two games where the Canucks have played so undermanned, and Spencer Martin played fantastic the other night, and tonight, you know, Mike DiPietro wasn't quite at the same level that Spencer Martin was at. But they got a goal from Chiasson last game. They got a goal from Tanner Pearson this game. Hey, one more goal would not have been the difference. You needed 2 more tonight.
Yeah.
But, you know, we start looking at these two games. You know, you get a couple goals from a guy like Besser or Pedersen or someone like that, that does make a difference. And, you know, part of this season has been waiting for those guys to really get going offensively, and it hasn't quite happened. We've seen spurts, right? I'm really encouraged where Pedersen's game is trending towards, but not quite as good tonight as he was the last few nights.
When we cite stats for some of these guys, it's always, well, this three-game sample, they've done this and this. You want to see 10-game samples. You want to say, hey, in the past 10 games, he's got 12 points. Look how fantastic he is. That's an eighth of the season. It's really coming together. It's two small sample sizes to say, well, Besser, you know, five games, and when Boudreaux stepped in and he started scoring some goals, you want to see that grow to, you know, 15, 20-game samples to really see these guys take that next step. And, you know, for someone like Brock Besser, you know, has he taken that next step in his career, or is he kind of plateaued a bit from where he was last year?
Well, and, you know, the question does become, especially for guys that don't have contracts, right, beyond next season, and Besser is a guy who's RFA, there's still club control here, it's really this contract, it can't be a push contract pick. When you have a guy who's 2 years for free agency, you can't just do a 1 year and then see what happens, or a 2 year deal.
A 7.5 qualifying offer is a heck of an evaluation contract,
right? And you're not doing a 3 year deal to only buy one UFA year, so you're essentially making a decision on either trading the player or committing to him long term. And that's going to be a tricky question here, right? And you know, I know Tony on Twitter asked the question about JT Miller. He says, anytime anybody brings up a JT Miller trade, my question is, who replaces him as the number one center here on this team? And I've made the point that I don't want to move JT Miller. The question with JT purely comes down to, does he want to sign an extension beyond next season? And what does Jim Rutherford view of him, right? That's my only question, and I brought this up numerous times. You move JT, there's a big hole you're going to have to fill, one way or another. And it is very hard for you to find that same type of player back in return. But the obvious thing is, if you can't sign a guy to an extension, you got to do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. But let's just say, for argument's sake, right, just purely hypothetical, that JT Miller does not want to sign an extension, open to a move, and Rutherford feels like he's got to make that move. That might not be the only big player you make a decision on here. And that's, again, a guy like Besser you got to make a decision on as well. And how he plays the rest of the season is going to determine that. And if you are struggling to create and you know, be a difference maker, especially these couple of games where you are missing some of your higher-end guys, if you are management, if you are Jim Rutherford, you might be viewing this and saying, I like this player, but do I like him enough to commit to him, and do I feel like he can step up enough if I can commit to him to be that difference maker consistently?
And the other part of this, too, is like when regimes take over, there's no connection to the players. That's why that whole evaluation, the first 100 days of evaluating, you know, Jim Rutherford doesn't really have skin in the game on selecting Brock Besser in the first round and watching this player develop from North Dakota and trying to bring him into the organization and try to grow him up through his development. There's no association to any of that. And so Jim Rutherford steps in here and says, I have no biases in the situation. I'm just evaluating the player. And if I'm going to pay him $7.5 million or whatever contract, as you mentioned, that you're trying to give him, do I believe this is the type of contract that reflects a player that can generate offense independently, who can consistently, you know, be a strong winger that can carry a line on some nights? Now, it's not going to be every night. You have Pedersen, you have Miller, you have certain guys, Horvat, that he's going to play with, and he doesn't need to be the star every single night, but that level of contract, you're going to need him a lot. Mm-hmm. Or is he just a really, really good complementary player that can be a first-line player? And there's a lot of those in the league, and they do earn a lot of money, but do they earn 6.5 and above? That's the question. And that's Jim Rutherford's job to figure this out over the next 41 games. And if that answer is no, That's another name that goes into the transaction list that you can start to explore.
And I do wonder, though, and I know we talked to Hershey about this, and we'll talk about this more as the show goes on. Get your thoughts into our text inbox. Grab a phone line. But here's head coach Bruce Boudreaux at the podium.
We'll start with Gemma Karsten-Smith, Canadian Press.
Hi, Coach. I wanted to start with the video tribute that we all saw before puck drop. What did it mean to you? And it seemed from way up here in the stands that you were getting a little bit emotional. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. When you see ex-players that you have a lot of respect for saying nice things about you, it's you never know how you leave them. you know, like when you get fired, you don't know if it's the players are, you know, don't want to play for you or what have you. But when you see those players saying those things, then it gets to you a little bit.
And what about your players tonight? It seemed like they deserved a bit of a different result there.
Well, they tried their butt off. I mean, there's no doubt. You know, I mean, anytime you can hold this team to seven shots or St. Louis to seven shots in two periods, and that's including a power play goal and probably a couple more shots on the power play, you know, you've done what you're supposed to do. It's just we have right now we're having a hard time scoring. I mean, we have a couple breakaways here and there. We have a couple great looks, and the one time we do score, two guys jump on the ice. So, I mean, really, really happy with the way they worked and the way they cared. I expect to win every time we go on the ice. So, I mean, unhappy with that result.
Next up is Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet.
Bruce, 1,000 games. I'm sure you've seen a lot, but have you ever had a weekend like this one with regard to goaltending personnel?
No. Well, not as a coach. Back in the 80s, we had a situation like this where a player had to go in, but that's in the American League. But never like this, where you've got six goalies supposedly and five of them and five of them are ill or have COVID. So it was definitely something new, and hopefully by Tuesday, you know, it can be rectified a little bit.
You're expecting that if all goes well, you'll have Thatcher back for Tuesday?
I'm hoping. My fingers are crossed, and Martin should be back as well, hopefully. So, I mean, all of those things, you know, point to, okay, we've finished this part of the history of the Vancouver Canucks. Let's move on to something else type stuff.
Next up is Daniel Wagner, Glacier Media.
Coach, you had twice as many shots as the Blues. How did you feel about your ability to get to the middle of the ice and create high danger chances against a tough defensive team?
You know, and I don't know how many chances we had. I think we probably outchanced them, especially in the first period when we had a lot of energy. But, you know, there's a saying, you got to make hay when the sun shines. And when you get those chances, you know, you've got to be able to put them in. And I thought we were fine until, you know, we wouldn't get the lead. We didn't get the lead because this is an experienced team that, you know, knows how to shut you down. They're that good. I mean, once they got the lead, they knew how to play with the lead. And I don't think they really pushed that much offensively in the second or third period. They just played to protect the lead, and they did a great job with it.
We've talked a lot about Pettersson, and he's been getting a lot more shots recently and putting up some points. Tonight he has zero shots on goal. Is that just a matter of the Blues playing a very focused shutdown game against him?
I don't know if they were focused on shutting him down. I think Pettersson had chances to shoot, and he didn't. And I think when you're a scorer and a shooter, you've got to shoot pucks. I mean, that's I thought the first 2 minutes on the power play, we scored at the end, but we were playing around with the puck too much. Let's on 5-on-3 outnumber the guys all the time. Let's shoot pucks and beat them at the net. And we were trying to be too pretty. And when you're trying to be too pretty, usually bad things happen to you.
All right. That concludes tonight's media availability. Thanks.
That is Canucks head coach Bruce Boudreau after a 3-1 loss on home ice against the St. Louis Blues. Said the Canucks tried their butts off tonight, couldn't fault the effort, just came up short being undermanned against this Blues team. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And at the end there, Bick, he didn't get too critical on Pettersson, but said he's got to shoot. Scorers got to shoot. He had opportunities and he didn't do it. And he thought they were too reluctant to shoot on the power play, especially that two-man advantage in the first period.
Yeah, and we know, like, Elias Pettersson does like to wait for the perfect shot.
Yeah.
And it's admirable at times, and that's why he had a high shooting percentage for much of his career. But on a night like tonight, when, you know, it's situational awareness. You have to know that, hey, you don't have Garland, you don't have Horvat, you don't have Miller, and you just have to try to create offense. Even if it's at the detriment of your shooting percentage or at the detriment of creating the best play possible, you just got to put the puck towards the net. You're too talented. And you know what ends up happening is when you pass up shots, you wind up relying on Jason Dickinson breakaways and, you know, guys who aren't accustomed to scoring.
Right.
And at that stage, you know, you look back at a 60 minutes and say, oh, man, I shouldn't have zero on the shot clock right now. I could have done more. And, again, I thought the effort from Pedersen was fine. It's not as if he didn't have chances to rip the puck onto the net, but that's that ownership of a situation that you got to just take ownership of it and be willing to be more aggressive and take the L on the shooting percentage. Just get the puck on net, man.
Well, especially in moments like this. We'll continue that conversation. More of your phone calls and text messages as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. More coming up on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
5 seconds left in the 5-on-3. Pedersen to Hughes. Left circle. Besser one-timer blocked by Parayko. Besser gets it back. Passes across to Pedersen to the back door for Chase. Enough for Pearson. He scores! It won't count as a power play goal as Barbashev and Krug stepped out of the box. But Tanner Pearson has his seventh of the year. And the Canucks lead 1-0 with 3.5 minutes left in the first.
Wow. Canucks took the lead, and that's as close as they got to winning this game, losing 3-1 after 60 minutes against the St. Louis Blues. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, and toll-free 1-888-275-0650. A lot of things to discuss, a lot of things being criticized. We talked about the high-end talent and the finishing not quite being there, goaltending really Husso outplaying Mikey DiPietro, and DiPietro himself mentioned that during his postgame media availability. We'll play those comments in their entirety coming up a bit later here on the postgame show. And Ian McIntyre will stop by for the final segment coming up after 11 as well. But special teams is also a big issue. We talked about the power play a little bit, but even more so, the penalty kill. At least the power play has been, you know, kind of league average, slightly above this season. You know, here and there, it's been okay. It hasn't been horrible. Still clicking at over 20% efficiency. The PK, well, the worst PK in the league. And despite the fact it got a bit better under Boudreau initially, they are now kind of regressing back to being a really porous PK. They've only been able to kill off 50% of their PKs recently over the last 16 tries, which kind of tells you how much trouble they've had on the penalty kill. And Justin sent a note here to us on Twitter, and he sends it from Sydney, Australia, and says, it's my first time texting in. Can you talk a bit about our PK pressure, the flanks, how our PK does not pressure the flanks? It seems like we leave the weak side of flanks so open that all the team needs to do is rotate the puck to the weak side, and half the wall and the half wall player has all the time in the world to walk in and load up for a shot or make a dangerous pass. It's a good observation by Justin, and something we discussed during intermissions, Bic, about how the Canucks kill penalties or don't, or a lot of discussion
now.
But I know we talked about this quite a bit, and I think Justin kind of outlines it. Not a lot of pressure there from the Canucks, and they always give you something on the PK, whether it's a weak side or a strong side, because they're not all that aggressive. Now, they were a bit more aggressive earlier under Boudreau's tenure. They're not so much now, and I kind of wonder if that's from a lack of confidence all of a sudden, or I don't know what's going on.
Personnel, whatever it is that's leading to it.
Because Boudreau himself was very, very clear. He said, hey, whatever was working before as far as pressuring was not working, and they want to pressure more, and that's kind of come away a little bit. And it is way too often that dangerous pass is made that Justin mentions, and really it's the seam pass. And consistently that finds a way to break the Canucks penalty killers. You kind of saw that on the Braden Schenn goal even.
No, for sure. And, you know, I think if you go back a couple of games, Nashville,
yeah.
Phil Tomasino also coming in from that half wall when the puck rotates around. And yeah, let's be honest, the Canucks power play, or the Canucks penalty kill puts a lot of stress on the two guys down low.
Mm-hmm.
So for what Justin is talking about, there's some space there. Who has to cover that? Well, when one forward stays stationary, he's not going to try to cut off that player. It's his job is to cut off the middle of the ice. And so what does the defender have to do? Battle someone in front at the top of the crease and then push out all that distance. And you saw it the other day against Tomasino. He gets the puck at the top of the circle, has all this time to walk in and kind of wind up a shot, and OEL just can't cover the distance. You see tonight, puck comes around, and I know we had some discussion there in the first period or the first intermission with some texters that were talking about, I don't know if that goal was on
Pullman
or OEL. And you look at that, or sorry, this was the second intermission. You know, OEL's kind of stuck between two worlds here. He does what he can, but Pullman's the one that has to cut off that backside. And when you don't, it's an easy pass. Like, these are NHLers. They're going to be able to make that pass, especially with time and space. And Braden Shen is just there to tap it in. Mikey DiPietro can't do anything on that play. And it's there was a lot of stress put on those two defenders on this penalty kill. And they just don't have the personnel to do it.
Well, that's where it comes down on the personnel too, right? And especially we don't have forwards that are good enough to take away those gaps and aren't as instinctive to kind of come down and take those lanes away. It puts more pressure on your penalty killers. But the personnel is also not great.
And I will say, I don't like the scheme even if they did have above average NHLers.
No, it puts too much pressure
It's so much strain for those guys. That even if you had, you know, three Drew Doughtys, I still don't like it. You're asking too much of those two individual players to cover that much ground.
Well, you're asking them to be high-level penalty killers. And if they're not that, it's very hard for them to execute that. Because what you have to do in that situation if you're Pullman is read it. And here's the thing. Sometimes you're going to have to give up a shot. But you'd rather give up the front door shot than the back door shot. Because the back door is a tip-in. The front door, at least the goalie's there and might be make a save for you. So in that situation, I know O'Reilly's a closer guy. But like you mentioned, his stick is on the opposite side because he's a righty shot in that aspect. And Shen is a lefty on the back door
he
play.
He has to take a step no matter what because the pass is coming from behind.
But regardless, if you pull him in, and that's where if a guy is a instinctive or a good penalty killer, he's going to recognize that the biggest danger is the back door play. I can't let that happen. Now, if O'Reilly gets the puck, at least it's right in front of the door. He's got to turn around to get the shot off, and my goalie's better positioned to potentially make the save, and I can get in front of it a little bit. You got to take that backdoor play away, and too many times the Canucks have failed to do so, and as much as you change instruction, it makes you kind of believe the personnel on the PK is really getting in the way, especially recently as well. A lot of good reaction coming in here on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of that as the show goes on, but let's go to the phone board. 604-280-0650, you're toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to North Van where Gary is on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, thanks very much. Great show. And I kind of want to agree with Bick there with the sense that we should actually look at guys over 10 games. But I'm bewildered why Dickinson is still playing up. I went to the game last night in Abbotsford, and there's a lot of young kids that could do a lot better job than Dickinson. And whether he's got some type of contract that makes him stay there, because Justin Bailey came out and he skates like the wind. He's, you know, that guy should be up all the time. And we've got Lockwood in Abbotsford, but having Dickinson, I'm not picking just on him. There's a lot of other players as well that, you know, now that our key guys are out, they're getting more ice time and it's more prevalent of how they're playing. And there's so many holes on the Canucks. It's almost like a time where you don't even know where to start, whether it's defense or getting new centermen and you want to trade JT or, and Pettersson, his stick's getting caught in the window and fans are laughing at him and he's laughing back. It's like a weekend at, 8 rinks. And I think over the time we pay a lot of money to go to games. It, you know, it's expensive to bring your family. If you don't go to an Abbotsford game, it's a lot cheaper and better entertainment at this point. But going forward, something has to be done to bring the brand of hockey. You know, in Montreal, they sat Caulfield, and he's their draft choice. He's their guy. And we can't sit Dickinson or other members that are just, they're okay tonight. Oh, they're okay tomorrow. Like we have no standard, and if we're not prepared to do something, why should we go and pay top dollar to watch a game?
Hey, Gary, thanks for the phone call. I understand your frustration here. Now, one thing I will say though is, I mean, you know, as far as the entertainment level, not having higher end guys, we got guys in protocol, that does cause a bit of an issue. And as far as Jason Dickinson is concerned, there are two different questions here. I think there is a reasonable and good conversation to be had about how Jason Dickinson has not been worth the contract he signed, $2.65 million, and how he's not been able to carve out as good a role as you would have thought after he was acquired. And the hope was he would play down the middle. And his finish has been a big problem. He's had a number of chances. He has not been able to finish it. However, just because he's not worth the $2.65 and just because he's not finishing his opportunities doesn't mean he deserves to get healthy scratchers sent down to the minors. As far as, you know, defensive two-way players go for this team, he doesn't score points, but he's been good defensively. Now, you look at the minutes he's played, you look at the tough minutes he's played and the matchup minutes he's played and how many defensive zone starts he's had, he's been on the ice for more goals for than against at even strength. So he's not been a guy who's been a problem for this team. He's not scoring, but he hasn't been a problem. So I understand what Gary's getting at, and I do think there should be a conversation had about, hey, does it make sense to have a guy making 2.65 on this team? That's not a really good fit. What do you do for that long term? I'm completely there for that combo. But I'm not sure that Justin Bailey, just because he's faster than Dickinson, is a more effective player than Dickinson. Defensively and the overall coverage, you see his play is kind of lacking in that regard. And as far as other guys in Abbotsford, there's been a lot of guys that have gone in and out of protocol. They tried to bring DiGiuseppe up. He ended up in protocol. Then guys ended up getting injured. Rathbone's a protocol now all of a sudden, right? Other guys end up getting injured. And, you know, a guy like Lockwood, he's been under consideration. He also got injured earlier this season. So I think a lot of things have come into play with the call-ups, and there's been a lot of issues that have happened. And I'm here for a conversation about Jason Dickinson and how much better he's got to be. I'm not sure, though, that this game has been so porous that you have to look at it and say, hey, bring somebody else up from the minors to fill those minutes. I think in the offseason, I'm all for having a conversation about what to do with him on this roster or not. But I'm not sure his game has been bad enough that you're looking at him and saying, hey, I'm not coming to a game because Jason Dickinson's in the lineup.
Also, what's Elias Pettersson supposed to do? Stick it stuck in the glass. That's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. Yeah, you might have an honest moment about it. It's kind of funny. Smile a bit. It's okay.
Yeah, no, I get it. it's okay. A lot of reaction coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox as well. 650. Gary, you're too serious, man. Take a chill pill. That's one coming in.
Yeah,
I don't understand
exactly
Buddy's frustration. They've got so many guys out right now. Relax. And yes, we can trade Dickinson. Yes, we can trade him at some point. That'll happen. A lot of good texts coming in, but let's go back to the phone board. 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Mobile, Alabama, where Josh is on the line waiting patiently to get on. Josh, what do you have for us tonight?
Hey, good evening, boys. How are you from beautiful, sunny Alabama?
I love it.
Is it Mobile or Mobile?
Mobile. Mobile. We're Mobile. Right on the Florida line. I'm actually
Senior
headed
Bowl.
Back from a pickup hockey game now. Yeah.
Nice.
You know, I wouldn't call tonight's game a bad game for the Canucks. I was kind of impressed, actually, with the way they played. They got a lot of shots on goal. You know, you just had a tremendous goaltender on the Blues side. And right now the Canucks are like, they're playing a game kind of like Legos. They're missing pieces. And it was nice to see Petro and Net tonight. But, I mean, can you imagine being out that many goaltenders? It's throwing the guys off. You're missing, you know, key players. You're having to make the pieces fit where they can make them fit to give them strength right now. All in all, I say they played a good game. They have some problems. The penalty kill definitely needs to be better. You know, they should have, with that many shots on goal, they should have had more than one goal. But, you know, I was really impressed with the way they played, with all of the adversity that the guys are facing right now.
Hey, Josh, great phone call. Thanks so much, and I hope your pickup game went well. Thanks for calling in here on the post-game show. And, you know, he's right about the effort. I mean, the effort was there. They played well. And when you look at the last two games the Canucks have played against superior opponents in the standings and on paper, and especially with how undermanned the Canucks have been, I've been very impressed with the team game. And I think that says a lot about the group and how they're feeling, how they're rolling. It says a lot about Bruce Boudreau. And like Ian and Dunbar mentions, it's like, hey, let's be real. If Thatcher Demko plays tonight, maybe a different outcome. And potentially, now you only scored one goal. This is where, tonight, there was a huge difference in goal. And not necessarily DiPietro being horrible. I mean, we talk about that. He never looks
awesome.
Comfortable.
Husso's like very underrated.
He might be the player of the week this week in the NHL. That's how hot he's been, right? He's been one of the hottest goalies in the league, if not the hottest goalie in the league. He's now won his last six games. He's won four in a row the starts he's made for his club.
And Jordan Binnington's like playing well. This isn't a situation where it's like, oh, we're not certain about our starter and we'll bench him. No. He's playing well, and they're still relying on Huso because that's how good he is.
Now, yeah, if you have Demko.
Meanwhile, Edmonton's like, come on. Look,
and here's the thing, though, right? Sometimes a team plays well, but you have other guys out. Yeah. And just because other guys are healthy doesn't mean you would have played as well and all those sort of things. But even beyond Demko, you got to score. And the other storyline for this Canucks team all season has been they don't score enough considering the talent they have. And it got better under Boudreaux so far. And perhaps it's a bit unfair to look at this recent stretch where they've been missing critical player after critical player essentially every game over the past seven here since coming back from the break. I can understand, but you got to do better as far as finishing goes. And unless you score more, we can sit here and talk about goaltending and this and that and PK and all that. You got to score more for the collection of talent you have here, and they haven't done that enough.
Let me pitch this to you, because it was 17 shots against. Remarkably low number. Is that a function of, hey, great team play? Or is that a function of DiPietro's in net, so we're going to try to be a bit conservative? Because think of how many odd man rushes there weren't tonight. And traditionally, under Thatcher Demko, it's a bit more open, and they do concede a bit more odd man rushes and high danger chances, but they're willing to do it because you got Thatcher Demko back there. So is this a style of play you want to see even if Thatcher Demko is behind you?
But here's the thing. I thought they generated enough looks. They didn't get the good shots off. The issue was...
It wasn't necessarily back and forth, though. It was a lot of in-zone chances, which is fine.
There were a few odd man rushes. Two Jason Dickinson ones. There was a huge two-on-one with Lamico. There was the other rush coming in off with Pettersson with Hoglander if he finds Besser on the back door. I just named four high-danger chances off the rush they had. That's good. That's four high-danger chances off the rush, and there's probably more. And high-danger shots, they had 15 tonight. That's pretty good. Like that's a good number of high danger chances. Now, opportunities, there may have been more, and perhaps we can talk about how you have to generate that. But they didn't give up a ton of those tonight. They generated far more. They didn't finish them. And the thing that was also frustrating, and I saw people mention this too, a lot of shots ended up not looking dangerous. They ended up being muffins or right into the goalie's crest and everything like that. And that's where the issue is. You're generating the chances, but the finishers you had weren't able to get quality shots off those looks. But as far as the discrepancy goes, if you generate 15 high-danger shot attempts and only give up 7, I think you did a pretty good job as far as playing your team game at evens.
Yeah, team game, again, was very, very impressive. And some bad luck. You know, Justin Falk makes an awesome tip-in. We talked about that PK goal and then the Kyrou goal. It's some bodies in front and a bit unfortunate for DiPietro not to steer that away. It does go off of him and in. Hard luck. But, again, we've talked about the effort in front. It was pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good. It definitely was. Herb texts in and says, finish. It's going to be the word we hear the most from Bruce Boudreaux. More trouble scoring than I'll leave that one. I almost... That was a good one, though. I like it.
This one from Jay from Maple Ridge. I was at the game tonight. Got to say, after the first, I saw a lot of Travis Green-style gameplay out there from the Canucks, letting the game come to them for most of this game. Do we think this is a goaltending overcompensation or just a lack of confidence of late? Kind of the discussion we were having there a second ago. The first period was the most encouraging, right? And that Justin Falk goal almost kind of takes the wind out of your sails because they were so good and 90 seconds to go before you're out of that period and suddenly a goal goes in. And how do you then raise your level? And perhaps they didn't really reestablish where they were in that first 17 minutes.
Well, one thing the Blues do really well, and I don't think their defense has a few guys that are good skaters, like Torrey Krug, for instance, and Justin Falk, depending on the day, can skate and move well. And Parayko's a good skater, but he's not exactly a super burner. So if you get those guys in transition or you get them along the walls with some speed, you can beat them. One thing they do tremendously well is clear the front of the net. And they do a really good job of not giving second chances and making it very difficult for you to get shots off. And
Scandella plays a lot of role.
Exactly.
That,
So I think a lot of their guys, what they did was when the Canucks would get a shot or had those danger chances, opportunities, they very seldom got onto the second chance opportunities, and they were prevented from getting better shots off. And that's a credit to how the Blues defend. And when you don't have, you know, guys who are good finishers in your lineup, and you are getting chances, but you're not getting second chances, and you're having a hard time getting those looks off in front because they're playing such good defense in front of their goaltender, it does make things difficult. And that's where the Blues excelled, I thought, defensively tonight. Not so much in limiting their chances and, you know, denying zone entries. It was literally about we'll give you the first chance. We're not giving you the second chance, right? And we're not going to let you get to that spot in front of our goaltender.
If you rewatch the game, a guy that maybe stands out is 77 Nico Mikula.
Yeah.
Not a high-profile player, just kind of does his job, but it's that style of player, Sat. He's on the left side, but it's that style of player that I think would look fantastic next to Quinn Hughes. You want that version, but a right-handed side. And, again, nothing special, does his job, does the business, can move around, can be a bit physical. But, you know, we talked in the pregame show how they've integrated some of this new talent into this lineup, your Kyrus, your Thomases, your Barbashevs on the back end. Someone like Nico Mikula, someone that they've done a great job facilitating a role for him, a prominent role as well. And it's worked out really well.
Well, the Canucks are still developing players that have certain roles. And, you know, one guy we kind of talked about that was Juho Lamico, who Boudreau himself talked about and mentioned if he can be a big, strong defensive center for you, he could be an important guy for you and kind of develop him into being that. Now, the Canucks also need far more players in so many different areas to kind of emerge in that sense over the next little while. But it's also having the environment where that can be fostered. And something that we talked about during the pregame show, Bick, was how the Blues have done a good job of incorporating the next wave of talent and, you know, developing them the last few years in the NHL, and now they're ready for big roles, Kyrou and Robert Thomas and so on and so forth with this team, and now they're playing big-time roles for this club. And that's kind of where this team needs to get to. But one thing the Blues have done well ever since they made that coaching change to win the Stanley Cup is have some continuity, have a philosophy, have an organization that's very well built and has a good plan moving forward. And that stability can allow those things to happen. So we sit here and talk about short-term with this organization under Jim Rutherford, what things could happen. Well, long-term, you hope the stability and the good vision leads to players developing into roles far better, like you are seeing with teams like the St. Louis Blues.
650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Pickles in Richmond texts in. I don't know about you guys, but that OEL pass is the best I've ever seen. Better than the Carlson saucer, the length of the ice in the playoffs when he played for Ottawa a few years back.
Let's talk about the bank pass.
Yes, the one to Dickinson. It was so good. I had to ask you a couple of times. It's like, hey, was he aiming for Pearson? He thought Pearson would be skating up the ice. And you rewatch it, like, the pass just stops perfectly. It's perfectly weighted. And it's not even just, hey, a bank to a guy that's on that side of the ice. It's a bank to a guy streaking through the middle. It was an unbelievable pass. I don't know if it's the greatest pass I've ever seen, because that Carlson one to me is one of one.
Yes.
That's I'm speechless even just thinking about that Carlson
There's
pass.
Been some, I mean, there was one pass from Henrik Sedin.
Off the boards?
Well, there was off the boards one, but the one that I still remember was, I believe it was game five against the San Jose Sharks. Or game six. I think it was game five or game four. It was in San Jose against the Sharks, where Henrik Sedin passed the puck through Niemi's legs.
Right, yeah.
I think it was to Alex Burrows and just kind of puts it in backdoor. It was an incredible pass, and the audacity of trying to pass the puck through a goalie's five hole to hit the guy backdoor. That's one of the passes that's up there for me as well.
It was an awesome pass.
Yes.
Tonight.
Yes. Very good pass.
And OEL's had a couple now. Against Nashville, he had an outrageous one to get out of the Canucks zone. He hit Nils Höglander. That was between essentially four guys, and he was under pressure to do it. Look, man, he's got some jazz on that puck. He's got some poise. He can do some things. And the bank pass was so shocking. It was, I tweeted, it was Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen-esque. That's how good it was.
Yeah, it was pretty good. That's a good way of putting it. And what a football game between those two teams.
Don't spoil the score, though.
Yeah, a little too late. Somebody was very mad at me about that. Said, next time you go to Toronto, I hope you stay in Toronto with all those other losers, because you didn't give a spoiler alert when talking about a football game on a sports radio station. Wait, what? Anyways, Aichi in Toronto texts in and says, can we just have an extended segment on when we only take calls from Alabama until iMac comes in to close it out? Loving the show tonight, boys. Thanks so much for your text. We'll continue the conversation. We'll get to more of your phone calls and your text messages, and we'll hear from Mikey DiPietro and more post-game reaction as the Canucks Central post-game show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. More coming up in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Robert Thomas back to center with speed. Left wing into the Vancouver zone. Gets around Pullman right to the front of the goal. And DiPietro stopped him with the left pad. Stuck right with him. Nice save from the young Vancouver netminder.
DiPietro, a couple big saves early on, not enough. Canucks lose 3-1 against the St. Louis Blues, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get back to more of your reaction here coming up in a couple minutes. We'll hear from Mikey DiPietro coming up in a couple minutes, who met with the media post-game. A lot of good comments coming in here and texts coming in. This one from Judy. I think Boudreaux really ready to get cheeky in front of the net, down low tactically. You've got to run a pick and hope it doesn't get called, or start positioning two guys short passing behind the net till a D bites and cheats the low boards, opening up the front net, right, left. That's from Judy texting in. And, you know, I like that. Some creativity there from Judy.
Some down low pick and roll.
I like it. Why not? Try it a little bit.
It was really interesting to listen to Alex Chason when we talked to him in the first intermission, because they were trying to be very, very elaborate. And part of that creativity on that 5-on-3 was Alex Chason lifting up sticks in front of the net so that seam pass could get through, whether it's Pearson to Brock or Brock down low to Pearson. Mm-hmm. They were trying to get that a lot from post to post, from basically the goal line for Pearson to the dot for Besser, and they're trying to get that through, and required some creativity from Alex Chason to manipulate the defender's stick to get a stick out of the lane. And he mentioned it's like, hey, we got to get the timing right on that, and it was really really illustrative description from Chason when he joined us in the first intermission. Mm-hmm. But it's that sort of stuff that you try to be a bit creative. Now the picks and stuff like that, got to be careful. You got to be careful. But it's certainly stuff when we talk about creating more movement. That's right. Part of it. Just getting the vision of someone else. Take a stick with you. Just, you know, drag it with you as you skate by. You can do all this sort of stuff that we just don't see enough of from the Canucks.
Well, the pick play has to be so well executed, right? Yeah. It has to be accidentally on purpose. The Sedins were great at doing that, right? I mean, they would stagger guys.
That was like a ballet, though. That was perfectly choreographed.
Exactly. But they made it look far too easy.
I should have said ballet.
I mean, choreographed. What do they call the swimming? What do they call what is it called?
Synchronized swimming?
Synchronized.
Yes. Yes.
Synchronized
power play.
Synchronized power play. Synchronized picking. I like that. Keep getting your thoughts in. One player I did want to outline a bit, and I love bringing him up because you're one of his biggest fans.
Yes.
Matthew Highmore.
1-5 out there working.
And he's creating a lot, man. Like, his finish isn't there, but by God, does he create opportunities, and does he create issues and problems for the other team with his speed. And that was evident tonight. I mean, there was a spell, especially in that second period pick, where I thought he was a Canucks' best player. He was generating. He was pushing. He had the Blues all over. I mean, he drew the 5-on-3. He got Barbashev to take a cheap shot at him, and then Torrey Krug came in for good measure trying to draw a penalty maybe from Highmore, who kind of just bit his tongue and didn't do anything. And next thing you know,
great restraint for him.
Very great, good restraint from him, and found a way to help the Canucks get a two-man advantage. But that's a guy who uses his speed, and if he can finish a bit more, it would be a far more dangerous hockey player. But I thought he had a really strong game tonight.
He had a Mike Modano moment, too.
Ooh, Mike Modano.
Flying down the wing, and the jersey billowed a little bit.
Yeah.
Mike Modano's the king.
Yes.
Like, whenever I think of a jersey billowing, I think of Mike Modano. And he had a moment. He flew past Torrey Krug. Didn't have the puck. It was chasing down a puck. And Krug was kind of turning, so he had a bit of a head start on Krug no matter what. But, you know, Krug's a very good mobile demon. Mm-hmm. And Matt Highmore paced him down the wing, got to the puck first, spun around at the half wall, and tried to create something. But there were numerous moments tonight just skating around with the puck. And I think now that he's getting this run of games here, right? Now, this is a guy that, you know, in Chicago didn't really get a lot of opportunities, played in the bubble a little bit. But by and large, his opportunities were very, very sparse. He's getting a run of games here.
Yeah.
Is there a certain level of confidence growing? And I'm not talking about, hey, uncovering a 15-goal score or something like that, but can he be effective on your fourth line? And I think his speed is very, very evident. And, you know, one thing, the scouting report on him was he gets to the front of the net. He will live in front of the net. Whether it's effective, but he will take the puck to the front of the net. He doesn't have a lot of fear, and I think it's been full value for what you've seen from Matt Highmore since he's arrived here.
He gives you something, doesn't get paid a lot of money, and helps you out on your bottom six. The question, you know, if you kind of take this one step farther is, let's say you can't keep Tyler Motte, you know, whether it's you can't sign him or he leaves or you trade him or whatever. Is he an in-house cheap replacement that you can maybe sign to a, you know, 2 or 3 year contract at $1 million or less that you can maybe hope can give you what Tyler Motte gave you for a very, you know, reasonable price? That's kind of, I think, what you're hoping. Not, you know, with the same level of finishing, because Motte, you know, he's a guy who can get you 10 goals over an 82-game season. And that's not an insignificant amount of goals for a guy that plays, you know, a lesser role in a PK in a two and a more defensive role like Tyler Motte does. But, you know, if that's a move you have to make or can't make as far as retaining Tyler Motte, then can Matthew Highmore give you something like that at a cheap rate for a couple of years?
For sure. And then it allows you to facilitate guys coming in. I know we talked about Will Lockwood earlier.
Right.
That's someone. And just keep building up the lower end of your roster. And if you go back to Jim Rutherford's time in Pittsburgh, there were just so many guys that just stepped in and you're thinking, who is this guy? And how is he playing with speed? And where does he come from? This is kind of what you need. You need your lower end of the roster and start building out your depth that even when these guys step in, again, we've talked about so many guys that you just go through the Penguins roster from, you know, 2017. And even now, it's like, Sam Lafferty, what's going on here? Who are you coming in? And it's just, again, playing effective minutes, not scoring, not lighting it up, but just being honest minutes, fill a role, and start creating a cluster of those guys in your organization that just step in and are able to play like Matt Highmore, that you're able to increase the speed of your team from the bottom of your lineup, the bottom of your lineup, and just keep doing that incrementally, and before you know it, you'll just see burners on this roster
and have more competent guys. And you're right, Rutherford, something that he has valued is speed. Not something this team needs a bit more of. Keep getting your thoughts into the text inbox. Dunbar Lumber, this one unsigned, not game related, but shout out to Pedersen for giving a puck to my exchange student. It's her last week in the country. We thought she wouldn't be able to catch the game because of postponements, but she got in and Pedersen gave her a puck. So shouts to Elias Pedersen for being a good sport, least according to this text message coming in. Now, we'll get back to more of your texts, more of your comments, but let's go to the phone board. 604-280-0650, or toll free 1-888-275-0650. We have Mike in Surrey on the line. Mike, thanks for calling in, man. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, good show. Well, you know the old adage, right? Who's you're supposed to be your best penalty killer?
Your goalie.
Right. We have one of the best goalies in the league, right?
Yes.
Okay, so putting aside tonight, this penalty killing is quite the mystery, wouldn't you think? Also, next point, even when the Canucks were terrible, their penalty killing was around 80%. Not great, but, you know, 17. So, Benning has made so many bad moves, but how good would Chris Tanev look on this defense right now? Come on, guys.
Well, here's the thing. I'm all for letting guys walk, Mike, but the thing is, if you're letting Tanev walk and then you're compounding it by paying Pullman and Hammond, it could combine $5.5 million, and you have Pullman for another 3 years. Yeah, I'd rather have Tanev at $4.5 million. So I'm with you on that one, Mike.
And I'm just saying that there's been a lot of focus on the penalty killing up front, but there has been very little focus on the defense, right? And there's only four guys being used this year, right? When the Canucks went to the Stanley Cup in 2011, they had eight guys they used. Now there's some injuries in that there, but it just shows you again the lack of depth on the D. You know, you're not using. I love Hughes, but they're not using Hughes, and he's 7 million, and they got four guys they're using. Mm-hmm. I just think more criticism should be on the defense and how bad even Edler. How bad do we miss? I'd rather have Edler and Tanev than I would for $8 million than Pullman and OEL. I'm sorry, I'm not a big OEL fan, and I think not enough has been made about the defense with the penalty killing. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. I mean, we did talk a bit about that. I think OEL's done a good job on the PK, but even him, Bick, you and I were talking about this off air. You know, we went through during the second intermission. I like how OEL's played this year, and he's been fine on the PK. He's been one of the better penalty killers, but he's really not a first-unit PK guy. Like, if he's on your second PK unit, now you're feeling like you're in a good spot.
Or he's next to someone that's a out-and-out PK specialist.
Right. But what's happened on this roster is OEL has had to become the de facto shutdown guy, the de facto defensive guy, the de facto penalty killer, the first option. That's what he's become, especially as being the only left-handed defenseman that can do those things effectively. So I think that's what it falls in. But I think Mike's point is right overall. We talk about the forwards, and I do believe they need another center that can help him on the PK. But those penalty killers on the back end don't exist on this team. You know, Myers and OEL maybe on a second unit, but a first unit, it's not good enough, and that's something they have to improve on. And when you look at the types of guys they have to add on this team, that's another area that has to get shored up here over the next little while.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier when it comes to the PK. The schematic stress it puts on the two D-men, they just don't have the personnel to pull that off. And I'm not even convinced that even with the right personnel, it would still be effective. And to effective, I mean that you'd see a top 10 unit.
Yeah.
I still think you, at best case scenario, the way it's being set up, still feel like you would see a best case scenario middling penalty kill.
Yeah.
And that's nothing to aspire to. You want to aspire to being a top 5 unit where you don't hold your breath every time they take a penalty. It's so difficult. Even when you have players who can accelerate and close off space, it's... you're still leaving up acres of space because one guy's stationary. You're almost willingly playing 5-on-3 just because you want to keep that main top-level Royal Road pass, the midline pass at the top, free.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. One thing the caller mentioned was your best penalty killer has to be your goalie, and the Canucks have the worst save percentage of any team on the PK in the league so far this season. They haven't given up the most high-danger shots or attempts in the league, but they've had the worst save percentage on the PK. Now, I do believe part of that is, yeah, goaltending has to be better, but you also look at the quality of those chances, because one thing that these shot metrics don't tell you about is, what, it's a high-danger shot. But is it, how many of those shots are backdoor shots where you have a clean look and a goalie has to go east and west? And if you're giving up that seam pass consistently, even if you're not giving up as many high-danger shots on your PK as other PKs, you're giving up grade-A quality ones. Those are very hard to save. So we can point to the save percentages, but if you dig a bit deeper, and this is where I think Clear Sight's analytics will be interesting to kind of look at their numbers and some other things about, you know, where the movement's happening before that shot kind of comes off and where Canucks defenders are positioned when that shot comes off, because I think that plays a big part in it. Because anecdotally, at least based on what we've seen, Vic, consistently we keep seeing the backdoor play. We keep seeing the seam pass happen. And yeah, oftentimes teams score on that first attempt because it's such a good quality scoring chance. So I know the numbers kind of indicate the Canucks PK has really got poor goaltending and they're getting the worst save percentage on it, but I think it's compounded by the fact that they're giving up the backdoor play. And what also happens in that situation, Vic, is that something that Kevin Woodley has talked about and other goalie guys like Alex Ahl used to always talk about, that as soon as you lose a little bit of trust in your guys in front of you,
right,
you start cheating. You start getting away from your spots, and that just compounds the issue. So a lot of things have been going wrong here for the Canucks PK.
Yeah, and again, for a unit that also, you know, by and large this season, you would say they've done a decent job as far as not being, you know, too heavily penalized. They still find themselves, you know, getting crushed when they find themselves 5-on-4, and it's simply not good enough because they limit the amount of penalties that they take, and the amount of goals that they give up is still staggering. It's just a staggering amount, and your special teams have to be better. Your special teams can't be such a deficit to the way you play your game, because you come into every game feel like you're down one goal already, because you know you're going to take a penalty, and you're essentially down to a coin flip if you'll actually kill it off.
Well, that's the thing, right? Do your best to kill these off a bit better. And Tony mentions on Twitter, put 4 average PK guys in front of Demko and you'd have a far better PK. And I do agree with that. All right. Keep getting your thoughts in. We'll get to more of your reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox and on the phone boards. We'll answer some of your questions too. We promise we play the comments from Mikey DiPietro, who met with the media after losing 3-1 against the St. Louis Blues. A tough game for the goaltender as far as coming out on the back, on the bad end of a result, but here he is post-game talking about getting a chance to play in the NHL again.
Hi, Mikey. What has the last couple of days been like for you mentally and emotionally? It was a long time between NHL starts for you. What was that like?
Yeah, I think, you know, these last couple of days obviously have been a whirlwind. You know, just trying to stay in the moment as much as I can. It's been a while between starts, but I think, you know, my comfort level is definitely obviously a lot more comfortable this time around. Thought I made more saves, but obviously got outplayed tonight by the other guy, but and the guys did a really good job in front of me making you know, some saves really easy. So yeah, the guys played great in front of me. Unfortunately, you know, couldn't get the win.
You were put in such a difficult situation when you did play that game against San Jose as a call-up from Junior. How much better prepared do you think you are now for this challenge?
Yeah, I think it goes along with the, you know, comfortability level. You know, once you kind of get adjusted to pro hockey, you know, the jump doesn't seem as big. You know, like I said earlier, I thought I was more comfortable out there as the game wore on, obviously. You know, we took it to him pretty good tonight in the ozone and, you know, generated a lot of chances. But, yeah, for myself, it's just trying to build each and every day. And, you know, like I said, I thought this time around, like I said, I felt more comfortable in the net.
A couple from me, Mike. I'm wondering how much last year may have helped you. I mean, you were basically a practice goalie last year and kind of like the shooter tutor. And then you had your adventure in Utica. How much did all that had to be a mental strain kind of prepare you for tonight?
Yeah, I think last year is kind of its own animal. You know, you said it there. I mainly practiced last year. So, you know, really not getting the amount of games, obviously, throughout that season that I'm used to. I just tried to make the best of each and every time I was on the ice. You know, when I was here with the taxi squad, I never really use excuses in my life. It's just kind of take it day by day and kind of, you know, tackle whatever obstacle comes. But, yeah, last year is definitely, I think, unique in a lot of ways for a lot of guys. But yeah, I think I was able to kind of round out my game a little bit more. And like I said, this year has just been, you know, a little bit of a whirlwind. But for me, I think, you know, growing each and every day, feeling more comfortable while you're here and still trying to, you know, make an impact in a positive way when called upon.
You've got 13 starts in the A this year, Mike, but it's a different game at this level. What did you notice tonight about, I mean, there was the one that deflection went over your shoulder and then the perfect power play, bang, bang play. Do things just happen quicker at this level? These guys just that much more accurate?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way they see the game, the way they hit the game, obviously is a little bit different from the American League. You know, they can make something out of nothing really quickly. And, you know, for myself, I thought, like I said, I was comfortable, but, you know, things happen quick out there. So trying to make it quick in-game reads, I'm just trying to, you know, kind of get used to that as well. And, yeah, a few bang, bang plays and, you know, unfortunately couldn't come up with those saves.
Mikey, you talked about the Canucks getting a lot of shots. You only faced 17 shots on goal. Is it sometimes difficult to maintain your concentration, your focus when you're facing so few shots as the game goes on?
Yeah, I think trying to stay mentally sharp, you know, throughout the entire game, no matter when the pucks come, you got to be ready for them. And obviously it makes it harder when they're kind of, you know, sporadic. And especially when, you know, you see the guys really taking it to them and generating a lot of ozone time, you know, trying to stay mentally sharp while the puck's at the other end. Because, you know, like I said, things happen quickly here and a quick bang, bang play and it could be a great A. So, you know, for myself, it was just trying to stay mentally engaged throughout the, you know, throughout the game and, you know, try to get as comfortable as I possibly could as it wore on and kind of learn from this game, you know, moving forward.
And I have to ask about the third goal. Was that just a matter of reaching with the blocker? Did it bank in off the stick? It was hard to see exactly what happened on that play.
Yeah, I just, you know, appeared on the screen and extended my hand and unfortunately caught the inside of the shaft and, you know, won the net.
Hey, Mikey, I'm wondering if you can take us through what today's been like. At what point did you learn that Spencer had been added to the COVID protocols and that it was going to be your start?
I found out yesterday. You know, it was kind of, you know, things happen quickly. Justin, you think, you know, you know what's going to happen. You know, things change. So, you know, obviously Spencer played a, you know, a great game, you know, the previous night. And, you know, I just hope, you know, he's feeling well. And, yeah, it was just found out and, you know, prepared, you know, for today since yesterday. And, yeah.
What does that preparation look like for you? It's obviously a little bit different coming into an NHL game where you haven't played at this level for a while than an AHL game where you're playing pretty much every week?
Yeah, I think yesterday was mainly for calling friends and family and kind of letting them know, you know, what was going to go on. But, you know, for me, I just tried to prepare like any other game, trying really not to overthink it. I definitely wasn't as nervous as last time, but like I said, the nerves are still there. And, you know, just trying to stretch, kind of keep my mind as calm as I possibly could leading up to the game and, you know, kind of shake away the butterflies as early as I could. So, yeah, definitely. It's a childhood dream anytime you get to play hockey for a living, especially in the NHL. And, you know, for myself, I was happy at the go around and in the sense of the way I felt leading into the game and even throughout the game, you know, a couple of mistakes here and there by myself and, you know, it could be 1-1. But, yeah, like I said, the guys played really, really great in front of me and, you know, huge blocks by Motter and, you know, really just try to make my job as easy as they possibly could out there for myself, which I appreciate.
Mike, obviously you're thrilled to play, but do you kind of feel for a guy like Spencer, who's a bit of an older guy and, you know, kind of had his opportunity to play a couple of games in the NHL here, kind of taken away from him because of COVID?
I think anybody who has COVID, you know, you feel for, especially it's, you know, majority of the time you don't even know you have it. You know, as mentioned earlier, Spence played a great game and, you know, it's a goalie fraternity and, you know, we're super close and as a goaltending core in general. And so, yeah, anytime a guy plays well, you're obviously happy for him and, you know, you try to learn from it as well when you're watching, you know, it kind of unfold like that. And, unfortunately it kind of got cut short with COVID, but, you know, for me, it's kind of the next man up mentality. And, you know, I just tried to do whatever I could to help the team out today, and fortunately it wasn't enough, but you know, like I said, it was a lot of fun being able to play out there tonight and a childhood dream, and like I said, something to continue to build off of and build more confidence from.
That is Canucks netminder Mikey DiPietro after meeting with the media coming off a 3-1 loss against the Blues here at Rogers Arena. But as always, Mikey has the right attitude. And Bick, I remember going into the Canucks locker room after he played his first game for the Canucks back in 2019 against the San Jose Sharks, and he got lit up that game, gave up 7 goals. He was put into an impossible situation mm-hmm. that year, right? I mean, they had no choice but to go to him as an emergency goalie, essentially, and he got ventilated. And I remember going to locker room post-game and being like, okay, well, you know, it's not going to be easy for this kid.
This poor kid.
And he just stood there, held court, head up, held head high, and he was super positive. He was so grateful for the opportunity. And he's like, you know what? Yeah, sure. But I play in the NHL, man. I got to live my lifelong dream. I didn't think this was going to be possible this year. You know how much I'm learning I'm going to take away from this? So he had the perfect attitude for something like that. And I know it's been a bit of a struggle for him and, you know, not the cleanest game. And he struggled a bit so far this year with the Abbotsford Canucks. But he has the right mentality, and I certainly hope that this is something that does push him forward this season.
He's got the type of competitiveness and mentality you'd love in every single player, goalie or not.
Yeah.
Hockey or not. It's just the, okay, this is what happened, processed it, moving forward, I know what I have to do, I'm going to compete. It's the perfect athlete mentality, it really is.
Well, he's a guy that's had to battle his whole life. Yeah. He's gone through a lot of adversity as well. That's why we all pull for DiPietro, and hopefully he finds a way to get back to the National Hockey League and figures out to better his game as time goes on. We'll continue the conversation. Thanks to those listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll be back for more on the other side as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
To the left wing side, drops it to Falk. Watched by Dickinson. Falk to the top of the right circle. Drops it to Kyra. Far point, trying to play again to Tarasenko, who gets it, goes back to Kyra with a long shot, he scores! Jordan Kyra with a long range wrister, there was traffic in front, DiPietro couldn't track it, and the Blues take a 3-1 lead with 3:17 left in the second.
Well, and this is the difference between a Thatcher Demko and Yaroslav Halak and Mikey DiPietro experience and how to look for pucks from the point.
Canucks lose 3-1 against the Blues. Good effort from the team. Outshot, outchanced the Blues tonight. Couldn't get more than one goal past Ville Husso, one of the hottest netminders so far the past couple weeks in the National Hockey League. Has now won 6 straight games for the Blues. Well, 6 straight of his appearances. He's won the last 4 starts he's had for that club. One of the hottest goalies in the league. and had a shutout the other night against the Kraken. Only let in one goal tonight with the Canucks near 40 shot attempts. So big performance from him. Was able to help the Blues win 3-1 tonight. It is Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. We are going to be joined by Ian McIntyre coming up in a couple of minutes, but we'll go back to some of your text messages here on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. Marty DeRed texts in and says, defense is one thing, but it's becoming clear that this team needs more goal scorers, and yet their best goal scorer, Miller, may be traded, and I would support maximizing that asset. That's the world we live in now. That is Marty the Red texting in. And, you know, that decision is going to be the big decision this team has to make. But I am still unconvinced, Bick, that player gets moved at the deadline. Not to say he can't get moved at the deadline.
Unconvinced.
I'm unconvinced that he actually gets moved at the deadline. Now, I'm not the same level of unconvinced that a move doesn't happen in the off season. That's another thing to kind of explore. But by the deadline, there's a lot of talk about Miller, Miller, Miller. The question is, the more pertinent question is, does Rutherford even explore to pull that trigger if the Canucks are in a good spot close to the deadline in the standings? Because right now, they got 40 points in 41 games, right? They're far behind the playoff picture still, but they still have 41 games to go. And they're only, at three
not
or four...
far back of the playoff picture.
They have to make up games in hand, right? Yeah. Just by pure points, they have to win those games in hand. But you got to win those games in hand, right? My point being here, you're still a bit away, but you're essentially a three- or four-game winning streak from that changing dramatically.
Yeah.
Because you go on a four-game winning streak, all of a sudden you're a few games over 500, and that changes your perception and what you do. Would Rutherford still move a player like him if you are in a playoff spot at the deadline or close to it? That's the question.
It depends on the inputs of information here, right? Because we're talking about theoretical ideas. And these are the conversations that every team is going to have about all of their players, right? So this isn't foreign to what's happening in the Canucks front office. But if I were to input something like the Rangers give you a really big offer, okay? So now you have to explore that conversation further. And if I added another input of information and I said, JT Miller doesn't want to re-sign here. Okay, I'm not suggesting that. I'm not reporting that. I'm just having this conversation. Don't you then think about that big offer and say, oh, man, this player isn't going to be here. And even in the summer, if we have this conversation, is he going to want to stay here? And now that I know that he doesn't want to be here, do I try to maximize the asset? Because now someone's going to pay a little bit more to get two playoff runs out of him. That's how this conversation gets shaped. No one's trying to deliberately move JT Miller out, and I think it would be, by and large, a mistake to do so. But if there is such an offer that someone is willing to pay and go beyond, then you have to have that conversation. And at that stage, I'd be willing to explore it, especially if you know he might not stay.
Right.
If you know that part of the information, then your whole scope of the evaluation process changes.
I just wonder, for an organization that's cared so much about getting into the postseason, getting postseason revenue, that they'd be okay with being like, all right, we're going to kind of punt on our chances. Now, a couple of things here. Number one, you got to be in a playoff race for this to even matter as far as a point of conversation goes. But I'm still, again, unconvinced a deal happens. And I think if they're kind of close to playoff race, I think that matters to this organization, to be able to get into the postseason, get some of those playoff gates in. Because the Canucks made the playoffs 2 years ago, but guess what?
It didn't mean anything.
No one got to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw it on TV. No fans got into the building. There was no extra money being made. There was no, real momentum as far as gate
goes. It more than anything because of the bubble.
Exactly. So I wonder about those things. That's not me reporting anything. It's me wondering how much that's going to play a part into any decision that gets made if this team is close to a playoff spot or not by the deadline. And I think that is what kind of comes into play here. And people text in, don't trade JT. What are you talking about? I don't want to trade JT Miller either. But when the reports are that he might be open to a move and Rutherford is exploring it, that tells you the possibility exists that it could happen. Now, I still believe the offseason looks to be the more realistic point to it. But again, if you're out of the playoff picture significantly or you are out of it by the deadline, if you're already quite sure about what you want to do, that may shape your decision-making moving forward there.
There's a multiple pathways this organization can take. And we were talking about this on the People Show the other day, myself, Bick Nizar, and Randy Janda, about do you tinker a little bit from now till the end of the season and say, hey, a UFA like Tyler Mott, that's who goes out, and you still believe in this group? Or do you say, hey, one move where you kind of thread the needle, and maybe it's a JT Miller, maybe it's a Brock Besser, maybe it's a Bo Horvat, but one big move that shakes things up, but threads the needle of, hey, replenishes a couple of assets into the organization, draft picks and prospects, which they sorely need.
Right.
And still kind of boosts the team here and just provides you with a little bit more financial flexibility? Or do you kind of do a bigger thing and say, hey, two to three guys kind of go out and you can explore, hey, Tyler Myers and all these other pieces and really try to shake things up? All those conversations to me are off-season moves. And I'm kind of a fan of the threading the needle and play out what these remaining 41 games look like. Yeah, and you're still this Rutherford regime, Boudreau regime, still in the evaluation process. Get the whole host of front office staff into this organization. Give them an opportunity to review everything and collaborate with everyone else in these departments and really come to honest determinations of what they have. And then explore in the offseason when you've really had a chance to sit down, send your package up to the ownership level and say, hey, this is what we think we have to do.
Right.
The offseason just gives you more opportunity to do that rather than trying to shoehorn something in now, unless there's an offer that really blows you away.
Well, one thing I could see happening here is you mentioned the bigger deals and perhaps somebody that's a UFA and Tyler Mott. And listen, I like Mott as well, but it comes down to how much money does he want and can you sign him? And it comes down to the salary cap picture moving forward. And those are all things that come into it. But what about something that's more of a money-shifting move, where you're shifting money from one type for another type? And you go through the Canucks roster, there are a number of players that kind of fit that mold, and especially a couple of guys who were brought in to some level of fanfare and actually some level of skepticism, at least on the defensemen, Jason Dickinson and Tucker Pullman. Now, both these guys have term left of their contracts, but they're not massive deals. You're talking about $2.65 million for Mott, and for Dickinson, who has 2 years remaining, and then Pullman, $2.5 million, but he has 3 years remaining on his contract. Now, on the surface, there are guys who have struggled, they have some term, but if you're willing to, say, move them for another player that's also making similar money but not a fit in another team, is that something that Rutherford explores? Because Rutherford has made a number of trades in his tenure where he's essentially doing something along those lines, where it's like, okay, this guy's getting paid some money, he's not great, but let's shift these guys out and see if this different change makes a difference. Or this guy has speed, he may not finish as much as that guy, or he may not be as good defensively, but he brings something different that may fit the way we want to play. Those are things that I'm curious to see if Jim Rutherford could kind of do here between now and the trade deadline. And that's still active looking big picture, but it's not quite as sexy as the other names you're talking about.
Yeah, that shifting the money around is something that this team really needs to explore just to create more flexibility at the bottom end of the roster, right? And again, I've sung the praises of like a Tyler Myers, but you know, there's still $12 million on this contract to go. If you can take on a deal that gets you out a year earlier, maybe you take a bit of an inflated contract just to say, hey, you get this guy, you get some cost control, we'll take the bigger cap hit, but we're out a year earlier, stuff like that. Or do you try to take a lower cap hit with an extra year? These types of conversations, just this creative level thinking outside of just this guy's worth $6 million, this is what we're going to have. Is there some outside the box thoughts that you can create to open up a bit more flexibility on your lineup?
Well, and that's the thing. Here's a question, unsigned. If you're Rutherford, do you trade for a player like Jake Bean at the deadline? I mean, I feel like
Columbus just acquired him.
Right.
They're going through their own process of...
They give him a second round pick to get him and something else, and he's kind of struggled there. I can see Rutherford taking a flyer on a guy like a Jake Bean, a guy who has talent, who's not quite getting a chance elsewhere. But here's the thing. What are you trading to get a player like Jake Bean? One thing Rutherford did mention was he's not trading away draft picks. They're not at the part of their evolution right now where he wants to trade draft picks for anybody. So if you're trying to acquire a player like Jake Bean, what are you trading to acquire that player? Especially when a team might be looking at draft picks. And that's kind of where it comes down to. And if you are looking to get one of those guys who is a younger defenseman looking for a chance, can you make those moves by only trading guys off your roster and not draft picks? And that's kind of where the challenge is if you're trying to acquire those players, considering how many picks the Canucks have moved. The Canucks don't have their second-round pick this year, for instance.
It's tough. It's tough. And if you go back to when he was at Pittsburgh, you know, two of the trades that really stood out of how to replenish that blue line... One was to trade for Marcus Pettersson, and it cost them Daniel Sprong,
right,
which was a nothing prospect at that time. I know he came with some acclaim at one point.
It's been a bit better this year with Washington, but still, yes. But yes, I'm with you.
It just didn't matter, right?
Right.
And the other one was John Marino, which I believe was a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
It's those types of moves that, again, low cost, high reward. You go through that, and you try to do that around the league. Those are the type of moves that I would sign off on. And you know, second-round picks, too high for my regard. You want to covet those and keep those in-house and acquire those, whereas the riskier moves, like the... Well, not riskier, but low leverage moves that have some reward to them. Those are the ones that I'd be looking at.
Right, and that's exactly it. And, you know, as far as anything happening or not, well, Jim Rutherford has been a very active general manager, and he hasn't been active so far with the Vancouver Canucks since becoming the president and interim general manager, and we'll see what happens between now and the trade deadline. It is a Canucks Central post-game show. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and it is time to make way for... the quadruple threat himself. Fresh off a TV appearance, just logged his story for Sportsnet.ca digital. He is on radio, Hockey Night in Canada. The man does it all, and he is here with us now.
Offered some commentary on the Chiefs-Bills game.
You did,
as well.
Too. Oh, very good.
We'll get to that in a minute, but first we'll listen to Jimmy. All right, that's enough.
That's good. Did anybody get mad at you for spoiler alert? Somebody got very mad at me on the text inbox because I dared mention the score of the Chiefs and Bills game
on
Sports Talk Radio. Yeah,
you know what? I heard this said a few years ago, and it's very appropriate about the era we live in. You don't have to go looking for news anymore. News will find you.
Yes.
So anyone who's delusional enough to be basically anywhere where there's interaction with anybody through social media yeah. or in person who thinks that they can hide from the result or talk of one of the greatest football games ever played is misguided.
Yes. That was a very nice way of framing it, actually.
Yeah. Misguided.
Misguided.
We're all that way sometimes.
Yes. Some more than others.
The Canucks were misguided when they signed only 5 goalies for this season. And we were wondering, remember in the summer when they signed Spencer Martin? Oh, hi, Bick.
Hi. There's a piece of paper between us here.
Bick removed a piece of paper off the plexiglass so we can now see each other through
the glass. through the looking glass.
You know, when they signed Spencer Martin and they already had Silovs and DiPietro, I remember, and I wondered this too, like people going, well, what are they doing? They're going to have 3 goalies in Abbotsford, and apparently Ryan Johnson knew something, except he needed 8 or yes. 7. And what a weekend. I've never seen anything like this. Mind you, we've all seen things we never thought we'd see in the last 22 months, most of them far more
yes.
serious and impactful than the personnel decisions for goaltending in the National Hockey League and American Hockey League, but never seen anything like that. Probably never will again.
No, probably not.
University students backing up in both Vancouver and Abbotsford.
No question. And, I mean,
it's great
how about the guy in Abbotsford, Joe Merdaka? I hope that's how his name is pronounced, because this is his moment of fame, although this could launch his career. But he's had 3 professional tryouts at the ECHL level already this season, because everybody's in dire need
right.
of goalies. This what the Canucks are experiencing, other teams probably to a slightly lesser degree have experience with their goalies as well. This is his 4th tryout. None of the other 3 lasted more than a game. So already with the Abbotsford Canucks, he's got in 2 games, and he won them both. He'd never played a game above the ECHL level. He's played in 3 pro leagues, 4 junior leagues. He comes to Abbotsford, and he sweeps a pair of weekend games against the San Diego Gulls. What a story that would be.
Is he available for the Canucks to use?
He's next up.
He might be.
He's next up because these university kids, I'm pretty sure they got classes, online classes tomorrow. They're not going to be available indefinitely. It's lucky they had time between studying and whatever else university students do. I don't want to say.
Well,
I don't want to speculate. I've
got
sons
kids
in university. So, but
I'm sure
glad they had time.
Yes.
I'm glad they had time to yes. help out the local professional hockey teams this weekend.
Just online classes. You can say, yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, joking aside, what a memory for those guys.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And the guy who was here, Rylan Toth. Is it Toth? Toth.
I thought it was Toth.
Toth.
Toth. Toth. Yeah.
He had actually, they'd been arranged for him because they knew they'd be short at the AHL level, mm-hmm. they had kind of arranged, Ryan Johnson had, that he would be the emergency backup in Abbotsford for the AHL game. Then they got a call, oh, by the way, you're promoted already.
Yeah, already.
You're going to be backing up in the NHL, not the AHL. So what a thrill for those guys. What a crazy weekend for the Canucks. Man, they played their asses off in these
Again.
Two games. But, you know, they just, you know, they to their credit, they got something out of the Florida game. Just couldn't get anything out of this game tonight.
Well, they deserved I thought they deserved more than 1 point out of the possible four. But deserve has nothing to do with reality, right? And that's kind of what happens when you're undermanned and, you know, you don't have enough firepower. And I thought tonight, as much as, yeah, Mikey wasn't quite as sharp as Spencer Martin, and Willie Husso was incredible for the Blues, and as much as the Canucks were missing three of the top goal scorers, and like Bick mentioned, over 35 goals out of the lineup, that's going to hurt you. But it has been a prevailing theme for this team. The power play not coming through enough critically, and that scoring, especially from your best players on any given game, hasn't been consistent either. And it's tough for you to win games when you're not quite getting enough from your topper. And tonight it's tough, though, but you know that finishing wasn't quite there this evening.
Yeah, I have a hard time really holding the power play accountable when you're missing Garland, Horvat, and Miller, mm-hmm. who I think have been their three best forwards this year. But so to me, I think that narrative needs an asterisk to it.
Right.
But it is an issue. That's something that they have to deal with, and the penalty killing they have to deal with. And that's not quite as prevalent on the guys who are missing. But, you know, Miller is still and mm-hmm. Horvat, both so important to them in every facet of the game. But I think one thing that you can continue to assess is how have Brock Besser and Elias Pettersson done. And obviously a ton of pressure on them this weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Boudreau would have liked more than... I'm trying to think. Did they have points on...
Pettersson got a point tonight.
Pettersson did, yeah.
He had a second assist tonight, yeah. But he had no shots on net.
Right.
No. He had some attempts. And Brock had, I think, six on net yeah. and 9 or 10 attempts. So,
and all six came in the first period.
But, you know, those are your only legitimate NHL scorers in the lineup. You know, after them, then you're looking at, you know, the Tanner Pearsons and the Alex Chiasons and Jason Dickinsons. So a lot was expected. I think they would have liked more from those guys.
We talked about him earlier, but Matt Highmore continues to showcase some speed and some effort. And I don't know, it just seems like slowly crafting a role for himself, whether it be on the bottom end of the roster, but even when guys start coming back, I'd be hard-pressed to send him upstairs.
Yeah, I would too, and I don't think Bruce Boudreau, the amount of love he's shown for Highmore, Mott, and Lamico, I'm sure none of those three are going to be sitting with us in the press box again for a long time. Highmore does seem to have taken a huge step this year from last year. He's far more effective, far more involved. And when that trade was made with Adam Gaudette, I know he was an easy guy to dismiss because he hadn't done anything, he hadn't really even established himself as an NHLer.
Hadn't won a Hobie Baker.
Hadn't won a Hobie Baker. We didn't know even what his position was. Like, what is he going to be?
Right.
What's he supposed to be? But, you know, we're all told, well, he's really fast, and you know that was the platform that Tyler Mott used. When he had nothing else, he had his speed combined with that tenacity, and Tyler Mott has built and is continuing to build an NHL career. Matthew Highmore looks like he's following the same route. He does kind of look like Tyler Mott light, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, a penalty kill, you know, Mott's a really good penalty killer, so Highmore has some ways to go there, but he is far more effective now than what he was last year, and it's surprising to me because, you know, if you think of the guys who got chances last year and really did nothing with them, some of them aren't even in the league anymore.
Right.
And he's back and had a big injury and was talked about roughly zero times in the time he was out because nobody thought, well, this is a guy that they would actually miss, even though he's injured. And he's made a dent since he came back. He's one of the good stories.
Well, he has been, and, you know, he's not Tyler Mott, but if you can't retain Tyler Mott, then having Highmore as Mott light it gives you something tangible speed-wise.
You guys already traded Tyler tonight, I gather, from the conversation. I love it, by the way.
Tyler, whenever, a lot of other people.
Okay. But yeah. I love it whenever I show up for the last half hour and like you guys are talking trades. And I know, half the roster has been turned over by the two GMs in the booth here.
It wasn't us really trading them. It was responding to people saying, trade this guy, trade that guy.
By the way, were you guys on the 40-man list that Jim Rutherford started with? The GMs?
Should have been, based on the amount of trades I've made hypothetically. Right. But I mean, because people keep asking the
question.
Maybe
he did it, and I thought it was a scam call. And I was like, no, good.
Put it down.
Yeah. Well, I know Carolina number. Oh, I'm not falling for that.
Yeah. Carolina general manager, I don't buy this.
Doesn't it always feel weird, though, when you know people, so you answer their calls, even when they're from strange numbers, but they've retained an area code from like two stops before.
So it makes
no sense. You always have to think, okay, who is it? Oh, yeah.
So connected to that number. Yeah.
It's from Tennessee. It must be.
Must be important.
Yeah. Are there hockey players from Tennessee?
I'm not sure, actually.
We got calls from Mobile, Alabama tonight, so there must
be. Wow.
Yeah. Well, there are hockey players from Alabama.
Yeah. Just tooting.
Nick Dowd.
Just picking.
Tooting.
Right now. Oddly Tootin, thank you. Oh, you saved me because I was thinking right now.
It's an all-time postgame show.
If Alex Auld is listening or Joey Kenward, they're screaming at me over their radios. Yes, Oddly Tootin.
Oddly Tootin.
Real name?
It is. It's a great name, too. I think what the question people have been asking is, what will Jim Rutherford do? Because we keep getting ones about, hey, move this guy, move that guy. What happens at the deadline? What doesn't happen at the deadline? And what Bick and I were mentioning, I'm unconvinced something big happens at the deadline, especially if they're in a playoff picture. Because we can talk about Rutherford knowing what to do and me wanting to think big picture. I think for this organization, if there's a sniff of the postseason, it's going to be hard for them to punt on that possibility.
Yeah, as I've said before, when you're in Rutherford's position, and they know this team has been, you know, as good as it can be since they took over, but they also know that it's not where they want it to be, big picture. But as hard as they play, I have a hard time really thinking that anything huge is going to happen at this deadline, because there's no need to make a Miller or Horvat trade now. But you have to listen to everything. In the position they're in, they have to listen to everything. So maybe somebody blows them away with a JT Miller offer because they want to have them for two playoff runs, guaranteed, and not just one if they acquire them next year. Maybe that happens, but I think we're just going to see some work around the edges of the lineup. And I would say right now, based on how these guys have played, I think it's, 10-4-2? Have I got that right since Boudreaux took over, essentially Boudreaux, Rutherford. With the lineup they have, I mean, look at the lineup they had tonight. And there's some score effect, and St. Louis is an experienced, really well-coached team, and they know when they have to try, or not that they're not trying, but they know when they have to push. They know when they can just kind of absorb pressure and see out a win. You know, they've won a Stanley Cup. They know how to defend a lead. There was some of that to it. But the Canucks still outshot them 49-17. 49 would be really impressive. 39 was still impressive. And now I'm wondering, did I just write that for sportsnet.ca?
You may have just done that, yes.
Oh, well, there's always time to fix things on a website. That's better than newspapers. Newspapers that live forever.
It was gone.
Shorthouse reminds me once, I had Steve Konowalczuk with a glorious scoring chance for the Colorado Avalanche the season after he left.
That is terrific.
Who did you meant to talk about?
It was a similar. I can't even remember who it was. Shorty will know. He's a really loyal listener, so he's probably going to call in.
Probably. Right,
but
there was a similar name.
It wasn't. It wasn't the name. It was the number, and it was the same shot, and kind of. And I was in Denver covering a game on deadline. I was writing down scoring chances. I wrote down Konowalczuk, and somehow it made it into the newspaper to live forever in print.
But now, a quick edit. You can just log in real quick, make a change.
A lot of people don't even know how stupid I am, but some do, apparently. Some.
if we could truly be outed, then anybody could do this job.
I've outed myself
numerous times
when it comes to my flaws as a journalist. So
he is Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. You can catch him Monday to Friday on numerous shows on Sportsnet 650, including the People Show with Bick Nazar, Randeep Janda. I'm Satsi Arshaw. You can hear me with Dan Riccio on the Canuck Central Monday to Friday, and also the pre- and post-game show oftentimes.
Are we not going to talk the NFL at all? Are we out of time?
No.
I got to get here sooner. If this is
okay,
if this
you really
is
do.
It, we, like,
okay, we have...
Too busy shoehorning Steve Cutter-Walchuk references.
Well, I know. I thought we were going to the bottom of the hour.
Well,
we
usually,
short now?
No, usually the time out is supposed to be 26, 27, but we end up going long. So, yeah. Yes, go on. You can share your thoughts on the Bills-Chiefs game.
Well, first of all, fantastic game.
Yes.
What was Buffalo thinking?
I have no idea.
First of all, kicking it to them.
Oh, the
or, sorry, not forcing them to run off 5 seconds on a
right.
on a run back. And also, on the last second-to-last play before the field goal, they've got their safeties 40 yards downfield. Like, Mahomes isn't throwing a Hail Mary.
Oh, they gave Tyreek all the time in the world.
He's looking for 20 yards.
Yeah.
You could have driven, floated an aircraft carrier through the gaps in the Bills' defense 15 yards downfield because the two safeties were 40 yards downfield, making sure they don't just heave it into the end zone for anybody to jump for. I don't understand it.
That's why I have zero sympathy for the overtime complaint. I was like, yeah. Oh, Josh Allen didn't get the ball. You kicked the ball away with 13 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And you had every opportunity to have that game to not go overtime.
And especially you give up the first play that went 25 to the 43. So you give up 18 yards in 6 seconds. So, okay, they're going to look for another of those. Well, by all means, let's retreat to our goal line just in case Mahomes is going to throw it 70 yards.
It's the old adage. The only thing prevent defense prevents you from is winning football games. Yeah. And that's kind of what happened.
Scared money makes no money.
Great sayings.
Yeah, but their overtime format in the NFL is a joke.
I'm a big fan of it.
Really? Yeah. You win the coin toss.
Well, you got to score a touchdown. That's not easy to do.
Still got to score a touchdown, yeah.
Yeah. Scoring a touchdown from scrimmage is
part
tough.
Of the game.
Yeah, you get a field goal, you get another chance. Scoring a touchdown. I agree with Bick to that extent. If you can't get a stop, and hey, none of these teams could get a stop. The final 2 minutes, every single time you touch the ball, you got to score.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
Like the fourth quarter of that game was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, the hockey game, not quite at that level, but maybe one of the best football games we've ever seen, at least in playoff games in recent memory.
Yeah, I would say that.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you for...
All right, good.
Let me think. What else happened this weekend?
Tom Brady lost.
Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride.
Okay.
We got to expand our board game horizons.
Yes. Yeah. We'll talk about that next game.
No.
By the way, was
when you have one as good as Ticket to Ride, you don't need any other games.
Was the Colorado Avalanche Cody McCormick?
No.
He was the next guy to wear 22.
No, and I think I would have recognized the difference between Cody McCormick and
Connor Walchuk.
And Steve Connor Walchuk.
Well, then your theory is unraveling here. I have all the number 22s for the
Avalanche. No, not the same number. A similar number. I think Connor Walchuk was like a 26, and I saw someone who was like 36 the year
later. The signals got crossed in the mind. That's what happens. Yeah. All right. Always a pleasure, Ian. Appreciate your time.
Anti-laxonin?
Maybe.
I'll say maybe.
It's not
Shorty
it.
Knows.
He knows.
He reminds me about twice a year.
Yeah. Shorty's always good at reminding you of your mistakes. And,
yes.
You know, that's what
I've Shorty only does. Got one of his because I think it's the only one he ever made.
I know. And he's probably still beating himself up.
Bertuzzi scores. Yeah. No, Naslin. that's all
that's
I have.
That's all I have, yeah.
Like one mistake in 25 years.
And he still really beats himself up over that one, too.
Wow.
That's what makes him.
Yeah, but he's got so many more mistakes, and he's got them in print. I think he's got the clippings in his pocket.
Yes.
That he carries around.
Probably. They're probably laminated. So
Al Michaels used to do that about people.
He's probably, like, miniaturized and made them small into, like, card lengths and laminated.
He took them to Staples. Like, this big stack.
People show pictures of the kids, and he just got... Ian McIntyre's
typos. Here are Ian's mistakes. Connor Walchuk. That's like a Rolodex of mistakes. All right. Always a pleasure.
By the way, you know how long ago that mistake was by Shorty. If it's Naslin and Bertuzzi, that was his big mistake. That's all I've got to hit him with.
It's almost been 2 decades almost.
He's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's pretty
bad.
Good at what he does.
Pretty good.
We all aspire to be as good at our jobs as Shorty is at his. And we'll read Ian's latest on sportsnet.ca. Listen to Bick on The People Show. I'm a Canuck Central. Lena, well, also on OT and did a heck of a job producing the show, and Eddie Gregory back at the radio station. And thanks to all of you listening, interacting with the show. This has been the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. And home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.